TED Audio Collective.
It's an exciting day on Fixable, Francis. We are talking to our friend Lola Bakary, who we met on Clubhouse.
Oh, I have such fond memories of Clubhouse.
Remind me what Clubhouse is, what you were doing there.
Yeah. So Clubhouse is an audio-only platform. I think it still exists, but in the pandemic, it was really a lifeline for so many of us. And I would host rooms, that's what it was called, and teach a case, a Harvard Business School case. We'd have a case discussion every week. We'd have office hours every week where people come in and talk about their questions. And Lola, who I've never met in person, but I know her voice so well, I can't wait to hear it again. She was an A student. Well, I'm delighted that she's calling in because I want Lola to be more contagious in the world. And if there's a pebble in the way, I'd love for us to help sweep it out of the way.
Totally. Let's listen to her voicemail.
Hello, Anne and Francis. I am an independent consultant. And my question for you is about this thing I like to call shiny penny syndrome. I have a lot of different projects going on. I have a lot of different clients that I work with. I have a lot of responsibilities. I have potential to be writing a book. I have articles that I could be writing. I never really say no to much of anything that I'm interested in. I say no to things I don't want to do. A lot of times those are the things I should be doing. So I'd love your help with figuring out how to get to a place where I can stay inspired and still feel passionate about what's going on in my day, but handle my responsibilities before I pick up any more shiny pennies.
Francis, what's your reaction?
This is such a high quality problem when there are shiny pennies everywhere to be picked up. And I think it's right when the newness, the shininess is so distracting and alluring, and it makes the mundane bureaucracy of our life feel uninspiring. And so how do we set the balance of doing the things that permit us to be doing things well while also getting the novelty of all of those beautiful shiny pennies? I look forward to it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Hey everybody, it's Neil. I've got some huge news. Decoder is moving to Mondays and Thursdays. We're adding a second episode of the show. On Mondays, we'll have our classic interviews with CEOs and other troublemakers.
I think we're going to have to start having conversations about how do we pay those jobs that can't be done by AI.
And on Thursdays, we'll be explaining big topics in the news with Verge reporters, experts, and other friends of the show.
There's a new generation of people on the internet. Google search has always sucked for them. So, you know, there's no reason for them to be loyal. They can just go to TikTok.
This is going to be really fun. I'm very excited about all this. So go subscribe wherever you get your podcasts now.
So Lola, first of all, it's so exciting to see you and put your face to the voice and an actual human as opposed to a little icon on Clubhouse.
Isn't that exciting?
It's super exciting. And hopefully we'll send you off with an action plan that you're excited to go out and execute.
I can't wait. And you know what? I'm relying on both of you to get me the discipline I need. No pressure, but yes, we'll dive in.
Well, let's start with your day job. So, okay. What is the work that pays the bills?
Yeah.
So I call myself a CMO advisor. Long story short, I'm a marketer by trade, started my career at PepsiCo on Gatorade brand as a marketing associate, and then worked various marketing roles after MBA at places like Dell and the startup I was at most recently, The Daily Dot, which is a digital publisher. And in those roles, the place where I'd always been most effective was in sort of advising whoever it was that was, you know, my leader or my manager or even my skip level, sort of what does Lola think was always like, what would you do? Not necessarily go do it, but what would you do?
And what are you I'm a CMO of a company. What are you advising me on?
A big one is who to hire for a project from a creative agency standpoint.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So much talent out there.
How to evaluate the potential talent, right? What should I be thinking about? And then maybe even more importantly, how to evaluate the work. Is this campaign going to move the needle or isn't it? I need another opinion that I can trust, but that doesn't have competing priorities to mine. So it's that sort of like external perspective, a right hand to the crown, if you will.
I definitely will. And so Lola, we listened to your voicemail. What's getting in the way? What inspired you to come have this conversation today?
Yeah. So what's getting in the way is I talked about the idea that I like to be in that moment of almost urgent response, but I also like to teach and I'm developing this thought leadership platform around responsible marketing. I've come to a point in this entrepreneurial journey, which I think a lot of people probably experience, where I need a new level of discipline and self-direction in order to accomplish everything I'm trying to do. And we talked about a book project being part of that, meeting those deadlines of this is the day where you have to have these chapters in. Like that just involves an ability to say no to a lot of things that might come up and be more interesting or exciting or, you know, evoking that desire to respond and do something that has sort of an immediate impact. So that's what I'm struggling with. It's sort of tabling my gravitation towards the shiny pennies of it all and focusing on the things I've decided to do alone.
And what's on the, when we solve this problem on this call, what's the payoff? When you get to the top of this mountain, what's waiting for you?
I think at the top of this mountain, I miss way fewer deadlines. You know, I change way fewer things around. I reschedule way fewer meetings, you know, and I'm a lot slower to say yes than I think I currently am. Yeah, it's just a more calm sort of existence, which also sounds weird. I'm like, do I want that? I don't. No, like that sounds kind of scary, but it does feel like where I need to evolve to just to be more of a sustainable human.
If we were going to just observe the behavior that we've labeled like shiny penny syndrome, but just observe it, not judge it, not label it good or bad. What do you think the need is that the shiny pennies meet?
Wow. Stimulus again, sort of like that feeling of being turned on, like, oh, wow, this is exciting. It's almost like I'm jarred into a place of flow and there's an enjoyment in that.
Totally. Learning, stimulation, growth. Mm-hmm.
Unexpected.
Variety.
Yes. Variety.
Which is a human variety. Need, Frances Fry.
I don't have it. I like the same thing every day.
Oh, really? Okay.
I wear the same thing. I eat the same thing. My wife loves variety. I love homogeneity.
I'm much more a variety person.
Yeah. I'm trying not to project Lola, which is not easy for me because I identify strongly with this. But is it an overstatement to say a sense of aliveness?
Yes. No, it's not an overstatement. That's very accurate.
So do you think it's fair to say that some parts of you are a little uncomfortable with the path you're on, but some parts of you are living their best life?
Well, a lot of parts of me are living my best life. Like it's sometimes it feels like a weird disconnect between the should and the desire. So like there's still a part of me that feels like I should be in a very stable is the wrong word, but
traditional, perhaps
traditional corporate role, you know, climbing the ranks and having that title and being associated with the brand that everybody knows. But there's so much more excitement to doing my own thing, you know, and especially now that I've been in getting some recognition for it that is mainstream, it feels like the best of both worlds. And I guess that's what scares me most is sort of like, how do you make sure this trajectory keeps going and not allow some of the sides of you that can be more scattered to get in the way of the continued ascension?
Yeah.
Like, I know I'm going to finish the book, but I'm scared about the fact that I might not.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say both those things in one sentence.
Yeah. I want to follow up on that, but I just have a clarifying question about the should and this internal critic. She's a little judgy, this internal voice.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. What a little, a lot. It's sort of like you shouldn't need so much stimulation. Like you should be able to exist without the need for all of these different inputs. But to your point, I don't know. Maybe I am overjudging it to some extent. Maybe there's a lack of acceptance of just who I am and how I am that is part of why there's any internal struggle at all.
Yeah, I'm curious about the part of you that's worried about the sustainability of this.
Yeah.
Because I really want to honor her. You know, I kind of want to put the critic in the corner. But the part that's a little anxious right now, what do you think she needs to relax and just trust that you're going to handle this?
That's a good question. What does she need to relax? I think she needs to see progress.
Yeah.
So like in the days I feel the best, it's the days I've gotten the most done often too. Like I had my list of things I wanted to accomplish. You know, I wanted to respond to these four emails or whatever it is. I wanted to send that slide deck over to whoever it was promised to. I wanted to get that chapter to my editor and it all happened, or most of it happened.
Right. And then she can sit down. This part, I just am deciding that it's a she. Might not be, but.
No, I think it's a she. She can sit down. She can relax.
Right.
She can have a glass of wine with her dad, not feel like she needs to like be doing something else. She can call that friend and have that hour conversation that's been being put off, you know. But there are too many days that don't feel like that right now.
Right. Right.
I'd love to try a summary of the diagnostic and just whether or not I'm tracking correctly. And I to me, it's you're a victim, it's the wrong word, but you're a victim of your multi-competences. So because you can be so broadly helpful, you're going to be delivered more than you can do.
The way you just put that, and I've often thought about it like that almost as a sarcastic joke, like it's hard to be good at so many things, but you nailed it. I mean, and I think a lot of immigrant kids, especially, I'll say it, Nigerian first-gen kids will relate to this. Like, we're trained to be good at everything. And if you're not good at something, well, you know, I remember that being told to me in the exact sense, you need to do what you need to do, even if it means you need to spend 5 hours to be good at it.
Yeah.
It's not, don't focus on that thing. It was always master it. You can.
So if I'm going to summarize the diagnosis, it's what do you do when you could do so many things and now you have to make strategic choices? And strategy is defined in part by what we say yes to, but it's really defined by what we say no to, right? And that's what you're doing. So we're going to figure out what's the right strategic choices, because in the absence of a clear-cut strategy, no idea is a bad idea. And I fear you encounter that all day, every day, where you want to do this, you want to do this, you want to do this. And if there's not a strategy to say it's aligned or it's not aligned, it's just going to be left to what my particular mood is at that time. So we want to get to a world where there are some ideas that are bad ideas.
Yes.
And we want the strategy to do that. So I think that's where I am on the diagnosis of it.
So if I were going to add a little bit more architecture to that, I think it's just a little bit more discipline around your process. And I think it's in this category of habit. I'm going to suggest, and then we can debate. I think it's around what you do in the morning hours before the world starts demanding your attention. Do you want to just describe for your audience what that reaction was?
Yeah. That reaction was like, I hope they don't ask me to say, because it's not going to sound good.
Well, that's super intriguing for Radioland. So tell us about your morning process.
It's not anything intentional at the moment. The average morning is me kind of waking up when I wake up. Maybe it's between 7 and 8. And the first thing I do is turn to my phone and scroll, and I read and I text and I respond. And maybe I write a few posts, but it's just sort of like responding to the moment.
And when is your writing self most present? Are you morning writer, evening?
I don't even know.
Or do you not know?
I don't know, because what I do know is that like it's, so much of it is about psyching myself into picking up the pen or the keyboard. And so part of me would say, well, no, like late night is when often I think that's just when I finally psych myself into it. And I know, because I've done morning pages before, I've had periods of doing that practice. And if everyone's not familiar, it's when you write 3 pages of freehand first thing in the morning when you wake up, literally before coffee or anything. And it's amazing. It's an amazing practice. The Artist's Way by
Julia Cameron.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the inspiration for that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I will say I'm not a morning person writer. I just think maybe I haven't had the discipline to be.
Let me propose something just to get your reaction. A ritual for the next month. You wake up at 7.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you check your email real quick or something just to make sure that you deal with whatever's happened overnight. But you spend an hour working on the book.
First thing.
You can have coffee beforehand, to be super clear.
This is not super precious. You can eat.
Yeah.
But the first thing you actually do before the rest of the world wakes up and speed dials.
And gets any of your beautiful mind.
And if it means you have to get up at 6, maybe you get up at 6. But before those calls start coming, you spend an hour on the book.
My authentic reaction is, that would be smart. I don't know why it's so hard for me to say, yes, and I will.
Because it's hard for everyone. Because you're human.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also about tricking the brain into doing this.
How do you do that?
We'll come up with a reward system. You'll text me because
after you've done it, every
after
day.
You've done it,
you nailed a part of me that's real. That is real.
Yeah,
I love being able to say, "Okay, I did it." Yeah. You know what I mean?
Totally.
That's interesting to me.
I have right now. I have 5 people texting me in the morning when they get up and do the thing.
Mm.
Some of them are friends. Some are people I'm coaching. And you don't have to text me. Text someone else. Like, just somebody to help hold you accountable.
And I have these people. This is the thing. I think for me, it needs to start as a shorter period of time. And it might even go longer, but I'm going to say 30.
Great. Perfect.
That feels good to me.
That's a perfect start. And then, but I'm going to give you some bad news that there was a second part of this plan that was essential to it. And which is that there has to be a daily movement practice.
Yeah.
But the only way to sustain it is it has to also spark joy. And like an elliptical makes me want to shoot myself.
Oh, gosh, not an elliptical.
So it's like figuring out
they shouldn't exist.
What is the joy sparking movement for you? So what is the What would spark joy?
I know it's pure bar. It's my favorite exercise, but you have to go there, and that's just so hard to like.
Yeah.
When you're in this place of responding, you know. But we're having this conversation. Like, I know these are the tools. I've experienced the transformation of them before. So it's like, if I know these things and I've done these things, why have I stopped? And like, why am I resisting going back to the toolkit that I know works?
But I'm going to respectfully offer that I don't care.
Okay.
I don't care. Like, people stop all the time. We're human. Like, we fall down all the time, and you're in this conversation with us because you want to get back up.
Yes.
So that's super clear. And that's the part of the story that I care about.
I love it.
Can I offer a...
Please.
I'm going to come at this from a slightly different way, Lola. And I will admit, I think you and Anne are very similar. I can't help but thinking you and I are very similar. So I'm going to I'm going to just speak to that side of you. So to me, your schedule is one that is an always on schedule, always on, always responsive, as opposed to scheduled time. Like, I even watched your verbal reaction when Anne was saying, do the same thing at 7, and it looked like she was asking you to hold cement blocks above your head. And so the flexibility to just do anything whenever you want and be always on versus the having any notion of structure.
I just want both of you to know I'm talking about an hour of structure.
I'm going to get there. So the research that Leslie Perlow and others did looked at teams that were always on and teams that had structure to them for when they were on. The teams that had structure to them outperformed the always on teams in responsiveness, in excellence, in everything. So I also have this, I need this freedom thing. Like, I respond, if somebody tells me I have to do something and it's scheduled, I feel like I'm holding a cement block over my head. And yet, I'm ridiculously ambitious. So I feel like I have figured out the minimum viable amount of structure in order to be ambitious. And it's not, I don't get 24/7 flexibility, but oh goodness, is it a little bit. So to Anne's point that she's asking for an hour, here's the reason why the hour ask is actually a kindness to you. If you're like me, you're spending more than an hour a day thinking about not writing.
That's a huge understatement.
You're going to get
all
of that time back. So this is actually going to be...
Wow.
That's the thing. And that's where the minimum viable amount is just what can we do to not do all of the other? And so you do it for 30 minutes and maybe it goes up to the max of 60 minutes. And then you are liberated, truly liberated the rest of the day that you're going to get flexibility that you didn't even know you had before because you have shed all of that baggage.
So you're saying I get more of the thing I want if I do a little bit of the thing I don't like.
That's exactly right.
Fascinating.
And for all of it, exercise, writing, all of it, I don't think we're talking about more than 2 hours a day. So you're still going to get 22 hours to do all of that stuff, but it will be an unburdened and an unapologetic 22 hours.
And I think to your point, Frances, in your current existence, like by not making that 2 hour investment, you're getting maybe 4 to 6 hours of like flow and focus because you have these parts yelling at you and demanding attention and distracting. But on the other side of that 2 hour investment, you get like 10 to 12 of those hours of doing whatever the hell
whatever
Lola wants to do, chasing any shiny penny you want. Shiny quarters, shiny dollars. I'm loving your resistance to the word discipline.
I am too. It's like, the wrong word.
It's 2-hour practice.
Did you see my face when you said that? Yeah. That is a and that's a word I've have I heard that word? Oh my goodness.
Great. What's the word that's
deliberation is
liberation.
I mean, one of my 6 values for my business, which I call BCO, is learning is liberty. I love that word.
You already had it.
Let's call it your liberation practice.
That's something. This I can commit to.
So Lola, what are you going to, first of all, did we make progress in this conversation?
We did. I mean, as you can see, I'm emotional right now because it feels so much more possible than at the beginning of this call. Coming into this call, I thought, we'll have a good conversation, but you know, I'm not going to change. I'm probably not going to change anything. You know, now it feels exciting somehow. I think you two are pretty magical.
Amazing. This was so fun for us.
Delightful from our end.
Thank you so much.
First of all, I think I need to do a formal shout out to Dr.
You sure do.
Dr. Richard Schwartz. We use the language of parts a lot in this call, and he is the brilliant mind behind a theory of human behavior called internal family systems, which is based on the idea of a multiple mind where we have lots of different sides of ourselves that not only show up for the world, but also have to negotiate their relationships with each other. And it's just a super powerful way into understanding ourselves and, sweetheart, the people around us. And you, like Lola, have parts that really like freedom.
I just felt such kinship there. And I think, you know, 22 hours a day of freedom, while it's not a trivial thing, it's actually better than 24 hours a day of freedom because I'm not carrying around all of the angst. And that's been the counterintuitive part for me.
As your wife.
There were so many words I'm you could have said to, there.
I'm just trying to think of what's really worth sharing with our audience. But I have to say, I myself have experimented with how much of that freedom I'm going to ask for.
Of me.
Of you.
Yeah.
And I have also learned that too much is not great for you.
Yeah. No, I think...
Even though you will resist, you are a happier human with a little structure, even though it's counterintuitive.
That's exactly right. And if I get to put my optimization mind, I can optimize higher if I don't have 24 hours of freedom.
And when that structure also comes from you, which I think was an important insight for Lola as she was working through this.
A little bit of deliberate liberation.
A little bit of self-invited liberation is going to have an enormous payoff. And I mean it quite sincerely that I am eager and restless and impatient to live in that world
where she is unleashed.
Okay, that's our show.
Oh, thanks everybody for joining us. This was wonderful.
And hey, we want to hear from you too. If you want to figure out your workplace problems together with Anne and Frances, send us a message. Email us at fixable@ted.com or call us at 234-FIXABLE. That's 234-349-2253.
We would totally enjoy working with you. Fixable is brought to you by the TED Audio Collective. It's hosted by me, Frances Fry.
And me, Anne Morris. This episode was produced by Isabel Carter. Our team includes Isabel Carter, Constanza Gallardo, Lydia Jean Cott, Sarah Nix, Jimmy Gutierrez, Michelle Quint, Corey Hagem, Alejandra Salazar, Banban Chang, and Roxanne Highlash. Jake Gorski is our mix engineer.
We'll be bringing you new episodes of Fixable every week. So please make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
And one more thing, if you can please take a second to leave us a review, we love hearing from our listeners, particularly when they have nice things to say about us.
We'll see you very soon.